The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
We will now begin oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is 3:22. We will go till 4:52. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Last May, the Minister of Health and Wellness stated in this House that the $3 million Emergency Room Protection Fund was used to fund the Rapid Assessment Unit, and it was also used to put in place more services for paramedics and also funded other personnel in the emergency room. On Monday evening in this House, the member from Lunenburg West stated that the same $3 million was established to hire needed doctors to keep ERs open. And I will table the answer which reflects both of those comments. So my question to the Premier, can the Premier tell this House which member of his caucus is right?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the Leader of the Opposition should know is that the Emergency Room Protection Fund was used to ensure that there are appropriate staff in place in the emergency rooms. They were used to transition some of the facilities in order to be able to provide better service. It's not a matter of which one's right or which one's wrong. It's a matter of the government using that fund in order to provide efficient emergency room services to the people of the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's about being open and transparent. Mr. Speaker, government is about being accountable to the public. It is about being honest and upfront on how government spends its money. We have the minister and a member of government caucus providing two different spins when information indicates otherwise. According to a Freedom of Information request submitted to obtain a complete list of initiatives funded through the Emergency Room Protection Fund, the response indicated, and I quote, the ER Protection Fund was not spent in 2010 and 11. So my question to the Premier, why do members of his government, including the Premier himself just a few minutes ago, continue to tell Nova Scotians that they have spent the Emergency Room Protection Fund when clearly, according to department officials, they have not?
Honourable the Premier.
As I point out, Mr. Speaker, we, of course, are guardians of the entire treasury of the province of Nova Scotia. We spend the funds that we get in order to supply the services that people need. And that's what we have done with the provision of services in the emergency rooms, as we have with the transition of facilities, as we have in sending the money out to the district health authorities.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure the Premier is getting it. Members of his caucus are standing in this House telling Nova Scotians that they are spending money to deal with emergency issues in their individual communities. There is absolutely no question that emergency rooms across this province are still closing. Over 18,000 hours have closed this year, Mr. Speaker. And members of his caucus are standing in this House telling the people of this province that they are using a fund for that purpose when clearly they are not. They are clearly misleading the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, why should Nova Scotians believe anything that is coming out of the front benches of this government when the Premier stands here and defends misleading the people of this province?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm not misleading anyone. Trying to give the Leader of the Opposition an answer. The reality is that we have, in fact, invested in improvements to emergency rooms. I was pleased to be with the Leader of the Conservative Party in at the I don't know if he's at all of them, but the openings in Tatamagush and in Pugwash, Parsboro, Mr. Speaker, the announcements that were made there, and the opening of the Parsboro Center. And Mr. Speaker, we're using the funds for exactly those kinds of initiatives.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday in this House, Mr. Speaker, the Premier described concerns about first contract arbitration as, and I quote, much ado about nothing. Well, Mr. Speaker, in one sense, he's correct. There is no need for this legislation. No one wants it, but someone is asking for it. And so my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier fiddling with labour legislation that is neither needed nor wanted?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure what the position of the leader of the Conservative Party is. It's a very simple matter. We are always looking to improve labour relations in the province. They've changed a lot over the years. So I pointed out, when it comes to things like contract arbitration, it's in place, I think, now for more than 80% of Canadians already. It's actually in place for 15% of Nova Scotians who are covered by the federal legislation. So, Mr. Speaker, it's good legislation in all the rest of the country. Why wouldn't it be good legislation here?
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, God help us, the Premier seems determined to improve labour laws just like they're improving education, just like they're improving health care. Let's see what they're going to try and improve next, Mr. Speaker. God help us all. Fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, first contract arbitration is a job killer. We need to look no further than yesterday's arbitrated decision for Capital Health, a 7.3% wage increase that, by the admission of the Minister of Health, will result in an additional $12.5 million in cuts to our health care system because of an arbitrator. My question to the Premier is this. Why does the Premier want to impose this same hardship on innocent non-unionized workplaces in our province?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, first of all, Mr. Speaker, it doesn't apply to non-unionized workplaces. He keeps saying this is not true. Secondly, of course, the former government brought in contract arbitration when they were in government. Contract arbitration is a standard feature in most jurisdictions in the country.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier should read his own briefing notes. This is first contract arbitration for companies that do not already have a contract. You have to have a union, but you know what, Mr. Speaker? They do have to have a union, and that is the point, isn't it? Because this is all part of a pattern. Several years ago, the Deputy Premier brought forward a bill, Bill 220, that says you don't even have to vote to have a union anymore. This is part of an ongoing, systematic plan to unionize places that don't want to be. That's why they ran through Bill 100 just last fall. It's all part of a plan. They want it. No one else wants it, but they're going to ram it through anyway. So my question to the Premier is this. Why doesn't he just admit that first contract arbitration is just the latest concession to his special interest friends?
Honourable the Premier.
I don't know what special interest friends he has that is motivating that question, I guess, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, there is a process underway. We put in place a labor management committee so that they can have an opportunity to look at labor relations. So there was an actual process for these things to take place instead of, you know, employers or employees being surprised by legislation that may not be helpful. This is a good process. Not only does it include employer and employee representatives, but it calls upon the wider community for its input, as it did in this case with small businesses and with other interested stakeholders in the community. It's a good process. We look forward to the report.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, in recent days, economic experts from across the country have been downgrading their growth forecasts for the Nova Scotia economy. Four major banks have recently released estimates that have downgraded the prospects for the province. Mr. Speaker, I have here to table today the four that I'm referring to, but I'd like to just point out that the Royal Bank has lowered their growth prospects to 1.3 and 1.6% for the next 2 years. TD puts it down to 1.4% for the next 2 years. Bank of Montreal is 1.6 and 2% for 2012. And Scotiabank has it at 1.5 and 1.2% growth, respectively. So my question to the Minister of Finance is the Minister going to revise the government's projections for economic growth downward from the current 1.9% to better reflect the updated economic facts?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for that question. Of course, the Department of Finance is looking very carefully at the international and national scene. Things are very volatile, Mr. Speaker. We know just in the last week, for example, we can have an apparent bond deal in Greece, which sends markets up. And then a couple of days later, with the announcement of a referendum, we have the markets heading in the other direction because of the fear that the bond deal is falling apart. And, you know, if people think that events in Greece have no impact here, they have a great impact here. They have an impact on bond markets. They have an impact on the rates at which we can borrow money. They have an impact on foreign exchange rates. In this very volatile environment, Mr. Speaker, we're watching things very carefully. And if we believe that an adjustment to our forecast is warranted, we will be making that adjustment at the time of the next forecast update, which is currently projected to be around the middle of December.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
And Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance is refusing again to revise Nova Scotia's economic outlook, even though the major economists, research institutes, and indeed the federal government themselves are revising their targets. It seems to me that the Minister thinks he knows more than all of these experts, but that his continued refusal to heed their warnings puts the province at risk. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, why does the Minister continue to ignore the advice of experts, and when will he publicly release the true picture sooner than the mid-review or the next quarterly review?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Part of the process, of course, of formulating our forecast is looking at the full range of expert opinion, and frankly, not all the expert opinions are in yet. The federal government has not yet revised its forecast. They will be doing that as part of their next forecast update. Many of the provinces have not yet revised their forecast. They have a schedule that they follow about when what information they will look at, when they will revise the forecast. In the normal course, Mr. Speaker, our next forecast update will be around the middle of December, and that is when we will be indicating whether, given national and international conditions, whether a revision to our growth forecasts are warranted.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the reason I raise this today is that the sooner we face the reality and make sure that we have reasonable estimates, the sooner the government can respond and adjust their spending this year in order to make sure that they reach their targets. There's a reason to do it sooner rather than later. You know, burying your head in the sand doesn't help at the end of the day. And Mr. Speaker, the NDP promised to balance the books before they were elected. And when that didn't happen, they raised taxes. So my question to the minister today is, will the minister tell Nova Scotians yes or no if he'll be increasing taxes again this year in the face of lower economic growth in order to balance the books by 2013?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when you are the finance minister for provincial government, which is a participant in the bond markets, it is very important that information be very carefully considered and that information be evaluated and released in an orderly way, Mr. Speaker. We are doing exactly the same thing that every Liberal government has done before us and every Conservative government has done before us, Mr. Speaker. And I am surprised that the Liberal Party would be calling on us to make what you can only call a knee-jerk reaction in such a difficult and volatile environment.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on a new question.
It is a new question, Mr. Speaker, but it again is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, people across this province are finding it harder to make ends meet. Too many people are losing their jobs, finding it difficult to heat their homes, and harder to feed their families. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have heard quite enough of the NDP rhetoric. If the minister will not listen to the forecast from the private banks in this country, perhaps he'll listen to the food banks in this province. Will the Minister of Finance tell the people of this province who cannot make ends meet why this NDP government is forcing more and more of them to turn to food banks?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to rhetoric, Mr. Speaker, nobody beats the opposition. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, the question of the situation of the poorest among us is a very important, very sensitive topic, which is why this government has paid so much attention through things like the disability tax credit, the poverty reduction tax credit, the affordable living tax credit, Mr. Speaker, taking the provincial portion of the HST off home heating fuel, Mr. Speaker, and unlike the Conservative Party, keeping it off, Mr. Speaker. All of these things are important ways that we have of supporting those among us who are least advantaged, Mr. Speaker. But on that score, we can never do too much, but we are doing what we can.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the cost to a family of four for a healthy food basket increased by $100 a month in the last 2 years. Power rates have gone up over 36% in the last 10 years, and this minister continues to do nothing about that. Gas prices have risen over 25 cents a litre since the NDP took office, and the minister refuses to make gas cheaper by taking the tax on tax off. No wonder more people are struggling to make ends meet under this NDP government. My question to the minister is, will the minister explain why his government chooses to ignore the rising cost of food, power and gas, which together are forcing more and more people to the food banks?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, with respect to increase in prices, I just want to point out to that member and all members of the House that the recent rates of inflation have been driven by two things. One is increases in food prices. The other is increase in energy prices. When you take those things out, our inflation rate really is very similar to the rest of the country. But those are two very important things. But the one thing that the opposition never seems to understand or acknowledge, Mr. Speaker, is that food is not taxed in this province, Mr. Speaker. And so I don't understand how it is that they can blame an increase in food prices on anything in particular that the government is doing when food is not taxed. The other thing, Mr. Speaker, is that it is this government. It's not the Liberal Party. It's not the Conservative Party. It is this government that took the provincial portion of the HST off home heating fuel. And we, Mr. Speaker, unlike the Conservatives, are going to keep it off.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to point out to the Minister of Finance that power costs affect every single store that sells food and sells items in this province. And transportation costs are significantly higher in this province because of a 15% HST. So that's hurting all of us. Mr. Speaker, the question relates to the hunger count yesterday that was released for the food bank. It showed that 22,500 people used the food bank here in Nova Scotia in the 1 month of March, and that 31% of those were children, and that overall this has increased 33% since 2008. So, Mr. Speaker, I would like the Minister of Finance to take some responsibility for those rising costs that are affecting people and driving them into the roles of the food bank numbers. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think it's important to understand that the affordable living tax credit that this government instituted, the very purpose of that is to insulate people at the lowest end of the income scale from the effect of the sales tax, Mr. Speaker. So for people at that end of the income scale, Mr. Speaker, the affordable living tax credit makes them better off than they were before. And the other factor, Mr. Speaker, is that people at the very low end of the income scale rely on the work of the Department of Community Services, Mr. Speaker, and that is one of the very important places that our tax dollars go. It takes nearly $1 billion, Mr. Speaker, of tax revenue in order to support the poor and disabled in this province. And yet, what do we hear from the opposition, Mr. Speaker? The constant drumbeat to reduce revenue, Mr. Speaker. They can't have it both ways, Mr. Speaker. They can't demand the government reduce its revenue and yet not acknowledge that that very revenue supports the poor and disabled in this province, Mr. Speaker. They don't understand it, Mr. Speaker, but this government does.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Yesterday, serious questions were raised about a cabinet minister and paving work in front of his home. Nova Scotians deserve serious answers, Mr. Speaker, but the Premier chose rhetoric instead of serious answers. The chip sealing work on a Renfrew Road in East Hants used provincial government equipment and, Mr. Speaker, provincial government workers to double chip seal a stretch where about 90% of the frontage is owned by the minister. The government claims it is on their plan, but the plan uses language that hides the fact that no reasonable Nova Scotian could figure it out. Mr. Speaker, having had a chance to reflect on his position overnight, will the Premier clearly state when the five-year plan with the Renfrew Road paving item on it was approved by Cabinet under his leadership?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, again, I have no idea what they spent their time doing with government, but we did not bring a road paving plan to the Cabinet. No, it did not, Mr. Speaker. It wouldn't, because the money is allocated under the budget. You get an opportunity to question that fully during estimates, Mr. Speaker. I have no idea why they would waste the time of Cabinet with such a thing.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the answer shows the Premier is still trying to avoid answering a very serious question. Mr. Speaker, so a simple question for the Premier, but an important one. Under this Premier's leadership, the tone he sets for the whole government, did the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations declare a conflict between his public duties and his personal affairs and absent himself from discussions about the Renfrew Road when the decisions were made where to pave?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I always said that it didn't come to Cabinet, so there was no discussion to be had. No, what's that? No. No discussions about it whatsoever. Thank you.
That's right. No.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I asked this yesterday, and it's a very serious matter. The NDP government has to be accountable, Mr. Speaker.
What are you guys getting paid for?
The Premier said he'd been out to the Monta Vista Road in 2008. I understand from a news story he knew his now minister had a personal stake, because the alternative he tried to avoid in 2008 would have cost him and his family, by his own admission, Mr. Speaker, in the Enfield Weekly Press at the time, $90,000. Regrettably, that is the fact that payment enhances his property means has a conflict of interest. Not a pleasant to say, Mr. Speaker, but it has to be said. Where were all the steps that the Premier took to make sure that the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations was not at Cabinet and not involved in any discussion that related to the paving of the Renfrew Road?
Honourable the Premier.
I'll reiterate it for the member. There were no discussions at Cabinet about this matter whatsoever. So there was nothing that the minister had to absent himself from. There was a road paving plan that was developed by Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. They are the ones who are in charge of it. We published it so that you could see it in advance, Mr. Speaker, which is, in our view, exactly the appropriate way for things to be done. I don't know how they did it in the past.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday Nova Scotians learned of an arbitration decision that not only sets precedent for future health care workers' negotiations, it comes with a price tag outside what government has been saying all along it can't afford. It is this government, Mr. Speaker, that chose the arbitration route as a way to settle with Capital District nurses. It's time for them to now own up and pay the piper as a result of their decision. My question to the Minister of Health, will the Minister assure the people of Nova Scotia here on the floor today that government will cover the full costs of this arbitrated deal and not download the responsibility to Capital District?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I would like to say how pleased I am that we did not have a strike in our largest district health authority in the province. Mr. Speaker, I also indicated yesterday that I and this government will work with the Capital District Health Authority as we analyze the financial implications of implementing this decision.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his second supplementary. First.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, all districts, including Capital District, have been asked to cut 3% next year. Now it's becoming clearer as to the reason why. The 3% cut has absolutely nothing to do with health care reform and everything to do with amassing a pool of money for government. My question to the Minister. Is the minister asking for a 3% across-the-board cut next year in order to pay for this arbitrated decision and future wage settlements, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Don't be ridiculous, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West. On your final supplementary.
I'm not sure, Mr. Speaker, if I was referring to you or to who, but anyway, well, we certainly know where health care is going, because yesterday when the minister referred to health in 1999 under the Liberal government, at least you could have orthopedic surgery within 126 days. Under this government, it's over 600 days, Mr. Speaker. Conservative estimates show an overall 3% budget cut for DHAs will yield savings of $47.7 million. Realistically, with inflation and with all other wage pressures, which for the time being are at 1%, this number is more likely in the $79.6 million range. My question to the minister, will the cut she is asking for truly reform the healthcare system or simply pay for the arbitration decision and any future negotiated settlements?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think most members of this House realize that we're making great strides in changing and transforming our health care system into a much more effective health care system, more access to primary care. We're bringing the emergency room to the front yards of people's homes with EHS and the Restore program, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, we're not leaving the health care system in the mess it was in the last time that party was in government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you, sir, is to the Premier. In 2009, the Premier campaigned on a promise to take politics out of paving. The Premier now leads a government which bought expensive chip sealing equipment and maintains an expensive crew, about 20 people, to operate it on the government payroll. The justification for this was that some of the areas of the province have little competition for this kind of work, and that this equipment could be used to bring the price down. And that's information that's been put out there, and I'll table that for this House today. To the Premier, why under his leadership is this equipment being used in front of the Minister of Service Nova Scotia's home and family lands at great public expense, when in his area, is in the centre of the province, has plenty of competition for chip sealing, and has benefited from low prices, contrary to the very justification his government used to get government into the paving business?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out earlier, the analysis that was done of the chip sealing program is that it will be less expensive, which means that more, in fact, roads can be done. We're very pleased with that.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in 1 year of paving, 1 year, Mr. Speaker, minimal chip sealing done by this NDP government, crews were dispatched to gravel and grade the Minister of Service Nova Scotia's own road in July. But, Mr. Speaker, do you know whose road got paved? And it was on the NDP priority list, Mr. Speaker, the very first to be paved. It was the Cove Road in Porter's Lake, Mr. Speaker. Where does that lead? To the home of NDP MP and former provincial leader, Robert Chisholm. That was the NDP's first priority. Looking after their own, Mr. Speaker. And I'll table a photo of that, Mr. Speaker. I asked the Premier about his leadership. How does a government he leads, using expensive government equipment and a large crew of government workers paving the roads of prominent NDPers, his high priorities meet his commitment to get politics out of paving? You said it.
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's hard to believe that they could waste the time of question period with such sad questions, Mr. Speaker. It's what a waste, of time, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have a public road paving plan that sets out, on the basis of engineering standards, what roads should be paved. We pave roads that need to be paved, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the problems with creating government road crews to do chip sealing, aside from the way the NDP are wasting the expense on areas where there was competition, is that the government, the NDP government, Mr. Speaker, do not have put work out to tender. If they did, Mr. Speaker, there'd be a paper trail. It would be fair. Nothing in a tender at all about either paving the Renfrew Road or the Robert Chisholm, the Cove Road, Mr. Speaker. So I asked the Premier, will he commit now to instruct ministers now to tender contracts in areas where there is competition, as promised, and to use accurate and complete information on all government documents so Nova Scotians can see with their own eyes just what this government is up to and which families really are they for?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, when we were elected, we and promised to take politics out of paving. That's what we've done, Mr. Speaker. We publish publicly the list of roads that we intend to pave. Unlike the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, and I want to table for you a story that ran during the 2009 election, in which the member for Hants West, who was campaigning at the time, said, "I've proven, given that they call me Check Porter, that I don't have to be in cabinet to deliver for my constituencies, Mr. Speaker. That's how they used to do it. Check Porter, Mr. Speaker."
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. Throughout the whole debate on funding cuts to education, the minister continued to tell Nova Scotians that the cuts to public education would not have a negative impact on the classroom. In fact, on April the 11th, 2011, the minister stood in this house and said in response to a question in QP, and I quote, "I trust that the impact will not be felt by students in the classroom." So my question to the minister is this. Does the minister still stand by the statement that the impact will not be felt by students in the classroom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I stand by my statement.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I do hope that the minister changes her position after she listens to what people have to say. The education partners across this province, including Alexis Allen, the president of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union, who represents close to 10,000 teachers, along with parents, home and school associations, elected school board members, and school administrators, have all spoken out against the minister's decision. They told her in September of 2010 what the impact would be. She didn't listen. They continued to tell her during the budget building process and asked her to be strong at the cabinet table and to fight for public education, and we know what happened. And they're telling her now. They see larger classes, they see fewer EAs, they see more combined classes, triple grades in elementaries, and I could go on. So my question to the minister is this. Who should Nova Scotians believe? The minister who said there would be no negative impact, or the frontline workers, our teachers, who work directly with students every day? Mr. Speaker, can thousands of parents and teachers who are seeing that negative impact all be wrong?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the opportunity to respond to that. I've had the opportunity of being in many schools this fall, and I've been talking to the frontline workers, which are the educational assistants and the teachers in this province. I have been very pleased to see that teachers have an average of, across this province, of 21.8 class sizes across the province. The classes I've been in have all been under 20. I've talked to teachers that have multi age groupings. People in the frontline workers, what I'm hearing of, they're very happy with the way things have rolled out this fall. I just want to remind the members that we have lost 30,000 students out of our school system in the last 10 years, while funding was increasing by 42%. We need to make sure that we align our resources, and we're making sure that we've increased it per student funding in this province, and it is actually working, and the frontline workers are very pleased with what has happened, and it was an honour to be at many school openings this fall, and I look forward to meeting more teachers. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North. The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. Mr. Speaker, County Lodge of Victoria County is billed as one of Cape Breton's most majestic properties and has been a source of pride for the local community since 1940. Unfortunately, the resort's sterling reputation is becoming tarnished. By the minister's own admission in this house last May 3rd, there are many deficiencies in the province's signature resorts, a problem he said could be fixed with an investment of between $1 million and $22 million. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister, what investment has been made to address the deficiencies in Celtic Lodge and boost tourism in the Inganish area?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to rise my place and talk about the signature resorts. We, as a government, recognize the economic engines that those signature resorts are in those regions where they call home. One of the things that's fundamentally different about this government and the previous government, Mr. Speaker, for 10 years, Mr. Speaker, those resorts were allowed to go into decay. A little bit of maintenance would have gone a long way. What we've done What we've done, Mr. Speaker, is we are approaching this in a very educated and systematic way. And one of the things, Mr. Speaker, we are not going to do, because it would be a flaw to go out and start willy-nilly in doing things without system in place. What we are doing, Mr. Speaker, is we are studying this thoroughly. We have studied it thoroughly. And I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, without a doubt, and for the member of the opposite, is that we will have a plan. We have a plan that will be going to Cabinet very, very shortly, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know if the government will have a plan or they have a plan. The minister answered both. But in the meantime, while they're making their plan, those buildings could be falling down. Mr. Speaker, the government's neglect of Celtic Lodge has not gone unnoticed. I received an email from an Ontario resident, Eric Berman, who stayed at the lodge in September. He said, and I quote, "The experience was indeed unforgettable. It was quite frankly an embarrassment. And that the lodge has become a sadly degenerated two-star facility with five-star pricing." Mr. Speaker, after receiving this email, I checked the popular travel website TripAdvisor, where reviews of hotels are posted by travelers. I was disappointed to see the once-celebrated Celtic Lodge is now being described as, I quote, "a big disappointment," quote, "really unpleasant," quote, "in desperate need of renovations and modern updates," and final quote, "a mediocre hotel." Mr. Speaker, I will table a copy of the email and the TripAdvisor reviews. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister. What is the minister going to do to halt the embarrassing decline of Celtic Lodge and stop the damage to the lodges and the province reputation?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I heard two words there. One was disappointment. The other one was embarrassment. Mr. Speaker, I can tell you what embarrassment and disappointment is, and it's setting over there, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for 10 years, they sat and they watched these facilities go downhill. Mr. Speaker, we have a plan. We have a plan that we are going to enhance. We are going to enhance the tourism experience for those individuals visiting those signature resorts, Mr. Speaker. And if they will stand back, stay out of our way, we will get the job done.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. But this question is going to be quite simple, but I sometimes wonder. What is this government's plan for Celtic Lodge? Why is the minister content to let the lodge and tourist dollars it brings to the area die a slow death? And will he table his plan in this House before the end of today?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I keep hearing the same song and dance over and over again. I provided the answer, and obviously is that, you know, just stay out of our way. We will get the job done. And you know, it was when we came in that we recognized immediately. And you know what? We are not going to do things willy-nilly. We are going to do awareness, understanding, and the action is on its way, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is actually for the Minister of Education. The Minister is aware that I was pleased that when her predecessor announced the long-delayed renovations at Prince Andrew High School would move forward. Now, the start was delayed, but it finally started, and we all thought the project would move forward on a regular and timely basis. Instead, this government has strangled the cash flow for this project. In the spring, I asked the minister about equipment the department had removed but did not replace. We still haven't had an answer. Mr. Speaker, it's much worse since then. Missing bleachers were minor compared to today's situation, where at Prince Andrew, teachers and students go into school every day wondering if they will have power in their classroom. They wonder which cables and plugs will work on that day and which ones won't. They wonder which days they will have heat. A few weeks ago, student services staff turned on a microwave and blew the lights in part of the school in the newly upgraded electrical system. And the board says much of this is because the department is not providing appropriate cash flow to keep the project moving along. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister please tell this House why she is not living up to her department's commitment on the timeline for this project, ensuring the board receives the necessary cash flow to keep the project moving forward?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Actually, I'm disappointed to have this question today because I would have hoped that the member opposite would have come to me much earlier with these concerns if he was really concerned about the students, because I have not been made aware of the problems with the renovation. But I will tell you, Mr. Speaker, that children's safety and their education is of the utmost importance to myself and to this government, and I will be exploring what is happening with this situation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm surprised by the Minister's answer, since in a minute I'm going to table a letter from her from June indicating she's aware of the issue that she just said she's not aware of. I guess somebody else must be writing the letters for her, but Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows well that the Tech Ed program, for example, is an important part of the Options and Opportunities program, and many of those kids are kids we're trying to keep in school and might be looking at opportunities that could present themselves down at the Irving Shipyard, for example. Yet people signed up for the program on the understanding from this minister that the facilities would be in place in time for this year's program. On June 22nd, the minister wrote a letter to the school advisory committee chair, you know, saying that the tech ed program area would be completed over the summer. It was not, and no new work was done over the summer. And in fact, on the date of that letter, the minister should have already been aware that a week before, the school board had advised her staff that they did not have sufficient cash flow from her department to do any work that summer. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister explain to this House why she was still telling people work would progress on projects like the tech ed department when she and her department knew that no tender had gone out and the department had not even provided funding to the board to do it?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. These projects are under the mandate of the school board, and as I said, Mr. Speaker, I will do what I was said I would do earlier, would be exploring this situation. It is now November, and this honourable member brings this forward at this point. I wish that he would have brought his concerns forward to me in September, because it was my understanding that everything was on schedule. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm bringing it up today because working with the School Advisory Committee, who has contacted her department repeatedly and received inaccurate information from her department, and the school board, who has contacted her department repeatedly and complained about the issue, that now we're here today. Mr. Speaker, teachers and students are going to school in a construction site. I'll table a photo of that, as much of the work isn't even being done right. The new gym floor that they just put in at significant cost is coming apart and isn't level. The badminton pole hosts, for example, are the wrong size for the equipment. The new paint is already peeling. Equipment has been removed. Mr. Speaker, the department, not the board, on the department's orders, pencil sharpeners were removed from the classrooms, and they were not returned because, according, the board was told by the department, pencil sharpeners are not deemed necessary in the school. Yet, Mr. Speaker, one thing was installed properly. The sign with the name of the minister and the premier on it, with a version of the NDP election slogan. Now, this went up, and I'll table that. This went up a short time ago.
Order, please. I understand you're tabling that. You can't hold it up in the manner as using it as a prop in the host, please. So just table it and continue on now and ask the minister your question.
You know, that went up a short time ago, and I'll tell you, Mr. Speaker, if I was that minister or the premier, I'd be embarrassed to have my name on that renovation
question.
At the moment. They couldn't find...
Question.
That's fine. Mr. Speaker, my question is, since they couldn't find the money for pencil sharpeners but could find the money to put this sign up, will the Minister of Education apologize to the students and community of Prince Andrew for putting a higher priority on getting a sign with her name on it than making the renovations move forward properly?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, I must say that I'm extremely disappointed to have this line of questioning we could have worked through this if I would have been notified earlier. Mr. Speaker, our students' education and their safety is of the highest priority. And as I said, and I made a statement here with the second line of questioning, that I said that I would definitely be looking into this, Mr. Speaker. And as this House knows, when I say that, I mean that. Good so minister. I'm looking into this. Thank you.
Good minister.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. The federal Conservative government is pushing through Bill C-10, which would impose mandatory minimum sentences, among other things. Other provinces have expressed concern over the impact of this bill. Quebec has publicly refused to pay for the resulting higher prison costs. Ontario has said that this could force the province to build new prisons and train more guards. Mr. Speaker, has the Minister of Justice examined and identified the impact that this Conservative bill would have on the justice system in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
I'll pass that to the Minister responsible for Intergovernmental Affairs because that's the question lines better.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We're well aware of the possible impacts of the bill on the cost structure of the province. We're monitoring that. As you know, both Ontario and Quebec have already made certain declarations about their willingness or unwillingness to pay for those increased costs. Undoubtedly, increased costs will be the case here in the province as well. We will go through a process to try and determine what that will mean for the province, and then, of course, it's our position that if we're going to create increased costs in the province, they should bear the cost through the transfer program.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Speaker, and I welcome and I thank the Premier for his answer, Mr. Speaker. This Conservative crime bill will certainly have a significant cost on Nova Scotia. Both Quebec and Ontario have expressed their opposition to the Conservative method of more prisons and more jails. In Nova Scotia, we are already dealing with issues of overcrowding in our correctional facilities and the strain on the correctional staff. Mr. Speaker, what steps has the Minister of Justice taken to ensure that this Conservative crime bill will not cause further problems in Nova Scotia and will not cause further strain on the Justice Department's budget?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the member for the question, and I'm very pleased to answer this question. Upon coming and being Justice Minister, I examined this issue as the potential as to the crime bill might have on the province as a whole. And that's why we did the very in-depth analysis on, for example, one area was the correctional facility. And the decision that had been previously made would have cost the province more money, would have been a further burden on the province overall. So by building the facility where we did, in the manner in which we did, we'll deal with the capacity issue over the short term. We're also presently working with all stakeholders and looking at issues dealing with the Justice Department. Our department has a very open dialogue with all stakeholders, whether they're in public prosecution, whether they're in the policing aspect, to look at ways of how this may impact. What's very important here is that we get accurate information and not do what the opposition wants us to do, is to throw money randomly out in the open and to have a knee-jerk reaction. We need a very strategic focus and look at this in a systematic way and address the issues as they come forward and be very pragmatic of how we spend taxpayer dollars.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, both Quebec and Ontario have already come out in opposition to this Conservative bill. They have already stated that this Conservative downloading will cost them big dollars. Mr. Speaker, this will also cost Nova Scotia as well. So, Mr. Speaker, is the Minister of Justice prepared to follow the governments of Quebec and Ontario and publicly oppose this misguided Conservative Bill C-10?
The Honourable Minister of Justice, the Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I actually addressed that before. I'm not so sure that the governments of Ontario and Quebec oppose the bill. They oppose the cost transfer that will come with the bill, which I think is a distinction. So, you know, we're obviously concerned about it as well. And there's two parts to it. One is that we need to try and anticipate the costs. The other is, of course, the practical aspects of implementation and trying to determine on the back end what the actual effect will be. So, you know, on the front end, we would like to see the federal government, you know, add more money into the transfers in order to support the program, if that's what they want to go forward. And on the back end, we're going to have to do some analysis of, you know, what effect that's going to have, for example, on the facilities we have and our ability to accommodate potentially a new influx of prisoners.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister for Community Services declined to explain why her department didn't bother to show up for a meeting of the Standing Committee on Community Services. She claims they only want to make sure everyone understands what the changes are to the special needs regulations of the Employment Support and Income Assistance Act. She said yesterday there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I'll table her remarks. And yet, the department, when given a chance to explain what was going on, did not show up for this meeting, which they had asked to attend. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give the minister another chance to explain why did her department not bother to show up to committee to explain to members of this House what the changes are.
Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said yesterday, the Standing Committee had invited both Dalhousie Legal Aid and Nova Scotia Legal Aid to come and to present their views on the changes. And we asked if we can come and present our views, because there's a difference in what both sides are seeing in terms of the changes. However, since we are a government that consults and a government that wants to work with people, we talked with Dow Legal Aid and Nova Scotia Legal Aid, and we have come to an agreement that we're going to work together. That might be foreign to the Liberal Party or the Conservative Party, but not to us in NDP, because we strive to work together. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Since the minister well knows that members of this House are going to have to explain those regulations to our constituents, failure to explain that to us doesn't make any sense. Mr. Speaker, in the August 8th announcement regarding the special need changes, the department's news release stated the department received requests for items like hot tubs and gym memberships. The release went on to say that 20 to 25 of these requests had been approved, and I will table that release. However, in the departmental briefing provided to the Community Service Committee in advance of the department's cancelled appearance, absolutely no mention of hot tubs being approved was made, and I'll table that information as well. Can the minister explain to this House why her department chose to use language that implied that people in this program were getting hot tubs?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, what we were doing was telling a variety, we said, a variety of special needs that were not within the policy, never in the policy. Actually, there was a sauna that was approved in 2007. There were several gym memberships. There were also several medical marijuana approvals. And we were also seeing a movement towards asking for grow-ops to be paid for by the people of Nova Scotia, which I do not think that the majority of people in the province would have been in agreement with. So, as I said before and as I said yesterday, we're talking about 25 cases that were not in the policy in the first place that went through this appeal process, and that's over a 10-year period. However, we're also talking within that same period of time, Mr. Speaker, that over 173,000 people in this province received their special needs through the Department of Community Services. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this minister always says she cares about low-income Nova Scotians, but when given the opportunity, she implied that taxpayers were funding hot tubs. This minister knew the media would pick up on the hot tub. This minister laid the groundwork for the poor bashing that resulted. And how convenient was it that CRA was in the field when this was all going on? Mr. Speaker, will the minister clear the air? Did the department actually ever fund a hot tub, or was the minister simply politicking?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I just said in 2007, a sauna, which is similar to a hot tub, was covered. They're similar. I was telling the truth. We were explaining that the items that were covered over that period of time, and definitely there was absolutely no poor bashing. The fact is that this, and I will table this, this government has invested over $100 million in the last year, 2.5 years for the most vulnerable people in this province. That's not poor bashing, and I will table that.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. On June 29, 2011, the Federal Government of Canada signaled its intent to move forward with pan-Canadian trials on the MS Liberation treatment. For MS sufferers in Nova Scotia, this announcement was significant, as it was the last remaining excuse the NDP government was grasping as to why Nova Scotia would not commit to the funding of a clinical trial. My question to the minister, now that this obstacle is removed, can the minister please outline what plans Nova Scotia has when it comes to funding a clinical trial for MS patients here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question because it does give me an opportunity to be very clear about what the situation is. Mr. Speaker, the federal government indicated that phase one and phase two of clinical trials could proceed. They told the provinces this, as the Honourable Member indicated. They also told the provinces, though, that they would need until the fall to develop some of the framework for provinces to be able to participate in this process. And Mr. Speaker, we're still awaiting that framework from the federal government. And I'm assuming, Mr. Speaker, when the federal health ministers meet here in November with the federal minister of health, we have this item on our agenda for an update so indeed we can move forward. And Mr. Speaker, I want to reiterate the position that I took back in June, that when clinical trials are approved and ready to go and we know how to participate in that, this province will indeed participate.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as you are likely aware, patients from Nova Scotia, and there have been hundreds of them, have made financial sacrifices to receive the MS Liberation procedure. They are the body of evidence, if you will, as to the efficacy of this treatment. Now that the federal government is indicating there is enough evidence to move forward with trials, will the minister please indicate whether her government plans to track and follow patients who have already received treatment abroad?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have had conversations with the specialists that treat patients in this province with MS at the MS clinic here. And they, in fact, do keep a very close track of patients that are leaving the province, and very often they see these patients when they return. And I'm satisfied with the information they provided me with and how it is that they interact with those patients. Mr. Speaker, MS is a very difficult disease. We're very hopeful that research will enable us to provide more effective treatments. And Mr. Speaker, I'm looking forward to hearing from the Federal Minister of Health with respect to how Nova Scotia could indeed participate in the early phases of clinical trials.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, there is no question in the province of Nova Scotia that green energy is important. And, of course, it was our government that brought forward the original plan to have green energy used here in Nova Scotia. And we have to move forward on that plan, and that's what this government says they're doing. But, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, he has said, his department has said, that 75% coal has gone up over 75% in cost over the last 6 years. And that was reported to our Committee of Natural Resources not too long ago. Can the minister tell me what is the cost of wind energy compared to energy that's provided by coal?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's great to finally have a question I can respond to. I thank the Honourable Member for the question, and certainly over the past decade or so, we have seen fossil fuel prices, especially coal, rising much quicker than the cost of living. In fact, as you mentioned, 75% over the last 5 years, really, is probably more accurate. Unfortunately, we had policy in this province where really very little was done by past governments, by previous governments, to change the increasing cost of electricity. It impacts and affects all of us. And this government has a solid plan to get away from fossil fuels and get on to renewables, wind energy and tidal and natural gas and other renewables like biomass and hydroelectricity. This is a good direction. It's the way we're heading. And renewables overall are probably about 1 to 2% on the cost of our electricity bills at this present time.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it was really nice that the Minister of Energy tried to answer that question. But the question was, how much does wind energy cost over coal? And for his education, I'll tell him that wind energy costs two-thirds more expensive than it is for coal. It's two-thirds more expensive to produce energy with wind than it is with coal. That being said, Mr. Speaker, at the Resources Committee meeting on October the 20th, officials of that minister's department stated that by 2020, 35% of the electricity that's needed in Nova Scotia would come from fossil fuels. He said, and I quote, "We see coal and petroleum co-potential as low as 35%, is exactly what his deputy minister said. So my question to the minister is this. If we still need coal in the coming decade, why isn't the minister demanding that Duncan coal be used instead of shipping coal in from places like South America?"
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, you know, when we reach 40% renewables by 2020, we're still going to be relying on fossil fuels, including coal. And but the truth is that as time goes by, the renewables will become cheaper. Fossil fuels most likely are going to continue to rise. But we're in the Department of Natural Resources. Now, I can put that hat on for a minute. We're actually working with the folks at Erdene and Xstrata and trying to see that the mine in Duncan is developed, and talking with Nova Scotia Power, and we'll see where those discussions will lead. But, you know, it's true. Fossil fuels will continue to be with us for a time. But our goal is to get off of fossil fuels and get on to much more renewable energy.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it's a good goal.
I have no problem with the goal. But the reality is that his department has said time and time again that by the year 2020, 35% of the energy needs in this province will be met by coal generation. Now, my question is very simple to the minister. Wouldn't it be better to have coal mined in Nova Scotians by Nova Scotians who are paying taxes to Nova Scotia rather than bringing in coal from South America?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, we in Nova Scotia have a balanced portfolio. We're looking at a number of renewables. We're looking at natural gas. We're looking at coal. We're looking at biomass and tidal and wind and a whole mix. So we're not putting all our eggs in one basket like previous governments did. We're really looking at a very diversified portfolio of energy sources, and we'll continue to look at all of those as time moves on.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll stay with the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, last week the Utility and Review Board heard from New Page, Port Hawkesbury and Abitibi-Bowater on their load retention application, but one of the lesser reported portions of that application was an application to be exempt from the demand-side management charge and the fuel adjustment mechanisms. The Minister will recall that this additional charge on power was first proposed by the Tory government, opposed by the NDP during the election, and then added to everybody's bill during the election, or after the election in the first session of the legislature. So, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table the application by Abitibi-Bowater and New Page. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Energy agree that these two large companies should be exempt from the DSM charge since they can't access the funds from that program anyways to improve efficiency as part of their operations, and that this could be part of a solution to reducing power rates at these mills?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Certainly, as Nova Scotians, we're all concerned about the cost of power, whether it's our most vulnerable citizens or right up through our small business folks and large industrial users as well. And, you know, really the cost is settled by the Utility Review Board, and they take into consideration all the factors, all the information they have available to them to come up with the fairest rate that that all classes of ratepayers in this province will pay.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister isn't answering my questions any better than he answered the questions of the last member. The fact is the Utility and Review Board didn't decide that those two... Mr. Speaker, the Utility and Review Board didn't decide that those two mills should pay that rate. The NDP did in their legislation when they created it, and the Minister is well aware of that. And the Minister is the only one, and the Utility and Review Board has said this, who can actually choose to exempt them from the demand-side management charge, which, of course, they do not have access to. And that's really the issue. They don't have access. Mr. Speaker, I recently received an email from a small business in Nova Scotia, and I raise these because, of course, businesses in Nova Scotia have not benefited from the HST removal because they always got to claim their HST back on power. Mr. Speaker, this business owner points out that they took advantage of the demand-side management program, reduced their energy usage, only to find that it bumped them into a higher power rate, and now they use less energy and pay more for electricity. So, Mr. Speaker, I wonder what steps the Minister plans to take to ensure that businesses who actually reduce their power and take advantage of these efficiency programs don't actually end up paying more for power because they get bumped into a higher rate class. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker. And, over and over... studies and reports have shown that the best way to save on our energy costs is through energy efficiency and converting to renewables. Those two combined will over time save us much more than the cost of fossil fuels. And, energy efficiency really is lower power bills in the long run. It promotes innovation. It reduces the harmful effects of greenhouse gases. It creates jobs. It's got a lot of good things going for it. And I think most Nova Scotians agree that efficiency and renewables is the way to go.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering whether there's an audio problem on that side that they can't hear the questions, because that had nothing to do with the question. The question was, it was very clear, Mr. Speaker, the question was that it wasn't saying the efficiency program was wrong, it was saying the efficiency program was actually having the impact of raising the bills of businesses in this province because it was bumping them into a higher rate class. And what was he going to do about it? Mr. Speaker, tomorrow, Efficiency Nova Scotia is holding their next stakeholder consultation because their new application to raise that tax once again on every low-income, middle-income, high-income, every business in this province. So, Mr. Speaker, the rate is already doubled. It's going up again. And I think it's time for the minister to finally answer the question, how high is the minister prepared to see this rate go before he orders a freeze? Before he says it's the Utility and Review Board's decision, the Utility and Review Board can only consider the legislation that this government introduced, and that means they have to approve funding for whatever programs are proposed.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, I had the opportunity to meet with Efficiency Nova Scotia this morning. They tell me that so far there's 36,000 homes in Nova Scotia that benefit from the energy efficiency programs. 18,000 alone this year. It's a small investment in our future. It provides more energy efficient homes, and it's absolutely the right way to go.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, too, is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, a recent study released regarding the service and maintenance for the tidal energy industry in the Bay of Fundy stated that Digby is at the top of the list for the locations to get this job done. My question to the Minister of Energy, has the Minister reviewed this report, and will he lobby to have Digby as the location to service tidal energy operations for this province?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, tidal energy has a tremendous potential. We have the Bay of Fundy with some of the greatest volume of water that comes in on every tide. In fact, I'm told there's more energy comes in every tide than all the rivers in the world. So we have a huge potential. We did the infrastructure study on the Bay of Fundy ports, including Parsborough and Hansport and Digby and a number of smaller communities like Tiverton and Weymouth and so on. Each one of them has assets, each one of them has value, and as we move forward, there will be a role probably for each and every one of those communities.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, last spring I asked the Minister of Economic, Rural Development and Tourism if he would push this incentive at the Cabinet table and help bring much-needed economic development to the Digby and surrounding areas in this new tidal initiative. His answer, Mr. Speaker, was yes.
Oh, I'll go right to you.
My question for the Minister of Economic Development. Now that the Department of Energy recommends Digby as the port, will you continue your efforts and support Digby to be the service port for these renewable energy operations?
Yeah. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my yes is unwavering.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, renewable energy is important, and so is economic development. It's important for Digby, and it's important for the entire province that this area be selected to service tidal, offshore wind, and wave energy projects. The report states that Digby is the only reasonable location to launch and carry out maintenance for these projects. So my question to the Minister of Energy, will the Minister commit to meet with the port authorities and others from Digby in the near future to discuss this important project?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, for the members' information, I did have the opportunity to meet with the Mayor of Digby and the Warden of Digby County, the chair of the Port Authority just last week. We discussed the value and importance of Digby as a community and the potential it has in the tidal energy field, and I know they're interested in moving that project forward and seeing the potential they have. They're looking at the possibility of an infrastructure study, and we said we would certainly encourage them to do that. So I guess we're one step ahead. We've already had that opportunity to meet with them.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, last week we were told by the Nova Scotia Road Builders Association that the NDP government's chip sealing operation was proven to be expensive and efficient. Also, that it started very late in the season and only surfaced a very small amount of road, Mr. Speaker. So my first question to the Minister is, why did the chip seal operation start so late this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to bring the attention to the members of the House of the importance of having a chip sealing program, because when we looked at the tender prices that were coming in, my first reaction was, what's the price in New Brunswick? And New Brunswick at the time was bringing in much cheaper when it came to tender dollars. Much cheaper. So what's the reason for that? I asked staff. And staff get back to me with the idea of looking at, well, let's review the whole situation and the possibility that we should operate our own chip sealing plant. Now, I can tell you, I had the opportunity this summer to visit the chip seal workers, and they were trained and did a tremendous job wherever they worked. But I want the member opposite to know, when it comes down to chip seal dollars and the dollars that have been spent, they've been spent wisely. Time will prove when we review this, when we operate again this next summer, how widely accepted it is going to be. Because I can assure you that when it comes to this particular project, it has been exceptionally well received wherever this crew has been.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the lateness and the start of the province chip sealing operation only proves how costly this plan is to Nova Scotians. Government has said that they can perform this form of operation cheaper, and I will table their own documents on this, Mr. Speaker. Just table that. So my question to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, is can the Minister tell us today how much the chip sealing operation cost Nova Scotians this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the member opposite I have a great deal of respect for, and I understand that he might have misunderstood. At no time as Minister did I say that we could do the job cheaper. At no time. I want you to know that when the cost came in at $91,000 per kilometer in 2009, in 2011 the cost is $40,000 per kilometer. Now the reason for that, is it just a coincidence that we have a chip seal plant operating? I don't think it's just a coincidence at all. I want the member opposite to be aware of the fact that when we can save over $1 million, when we can save over $1 million to be used in other projects around this province, that's how we're going to continue to do business in the transportation department.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My final question to the Minister, will the Minister undertake to table a list of the roads that were chip sealed surface this year by the government's chip sealing operation? Will he undertake to table that information, please?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the member opposite, if I had the time, I could perhaps do it here out of the five-year road plan. That's a sensible question. It receives a sensible answer, and that information will be forthcoming. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This government is putting frontline health care in serious jeopardy with its lack of direction associated with decreasing funding and rising costs. The Minister of Health and Wellness asked the district health authorities to cut 3% out of their budgets for next year. Out of a $1.6 billion budget, this amounts to a $45.5 million cut, as the Minister defensively pointed out to the member for King's West yesterday in question period. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness is, with the upward pressure on costs and the downward pressure on funding, how does the Minister expect this not to affect frontline health services?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the District Health Authorities and the IWK are exercising great leadership in terms of the way they're identifying ways to find efficiencies within the healthcare system. There are a number of initiatives underway where we are combining purchasing, the functioning of different administrative pieces of the healthcare system. Mr. Speaker, I've asked the district health authorities as they do their budget plans for this year to ensure that they protect patient care, that they protect the mental health and addiction services. And Mr. Speaker, I will work with the district health authorities as they develop their proposals. I want to point out, Mr. Speaker, that this is the earliest that the district health authorities have ever had their budget targets. It allows them an opportunity to have discussions among themselves to look at how they can find efficiencies, in fact, by collaborating across DHAs rather than only looking internally inside their own budget envelope.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Nurses are vital to primary care in our province, and they deserve to be fairly compensated for their hard, demanding work. However, yesterday, when we learned of the arbitrator's ruling for NSGU nurses in Capital Health Authority of a 7.1% wage increase over a three-year period, retroactive to November 1st, 2009, we can only conclude that this will set a trend for increasing labor costs across the province. AllNovaScotia.com, which I will table in a couple seconds here, is reporting today that the increase in wages to nurses will cost about $12.5 million. Also, Mr. Speaker, in an article on SouthShoreNow.ca, which I'll also table, the South Shore Health says the cut will amount to $2.1 million. The CEO, Alice Lieberman, told board members in October that the 3% does not include increases on several contracts, including with NSGU, QP, NSNU, and she felt that this would increase that cut to about $4 million. So, Mr. Speaker, I just want to ask the minister, does she understand the complexity of what she's asking the DHAs to do? Because the number is actually far larger than a 3% cut.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, we've had the healthcare budgets grow in some cases at a rate of 10% annually year over year. And this certainly is not a situation that can be sustained. And particularly, I think it's concerning that we weren't necessarily getting the kind of health outcomes that we require. And so we are now working with the DHAs to say we need a sustainable healthcare system. We need to improve the quality and the outcomes of the healthcare that we're getting. I recognize that it is a challenge, Mr. Speaker, and this is why, in fact, we proceeded in a very thoughtful way. This year, the DHAs weren't given any additional funding. We've given them their budget targets for next year earlier than it has ever happened before. We've been in conversations with the DHAs around a range of options that they will need to work through and consider and bring me some concrete plans on. And, Mr. Speaker, I know that I've watched what that member had to say. He indicated that he thought the deep cuts should have been made in health care in the first year of our mandate. That's not our approach, Mr. Speaker. That may have been the plan that party had if they had formed the government, but thank heavens they didn't, Mr. Speaker. We're taking a much more thoughtful approach.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we're just trying to find answers here to a large question, because I know the Minister has said on many occasions that the 3% amounts to $45.5 million. But when you look at all the other things that are being asked of the district health authorities, the things that they're going to have to so-called eat as it rolls around, that's wage increases, that is, of course, cost of living increases, that's fuel, that's lights, that's everything else that goes with it. So, Mr. Speaker, in a press release on October 14th, which I will table, the minister calls the cuts a challenge, not a challenge, but an opportunity. And it says that we know this is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the minister is that how can she call in what we estimate, with all the added pieces to it, close to a $100 million cut, because they're going to have to take in a whole bunch of other issues. How can she call that an opportunity when things like dialysis, oncology, surgery, and a whole bunch of other programs that are important to patients in Nova Scotia might have to be maybe not cut completely, but maybe shut down for other reasons? So, Mr. Speaker, I'm just again wondering, how can she call that an opportunity?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, we indeed do have an opportunity to have a health care system that is more responsive, where every dollar that we are expending for health care actually provides health care. It's not giving us more administration. It's not giving us other things, but in fact, it goes directly into patient care. Mr. Speaker, we have seen the stroke strategy, for example, in the province, result in the collaboration across district health authorities and an improvement in the quality of care that stroke patients get, rather than duplicating that care in every district health authority, but at a lower quality. We have now centers of absolute excellence for patients who have strokes, who are able then to return to their home district for the ongoing care, having had the specialized service. So, Mr. Speaker, there is a way to provide better health care sooner to Nova Scotians, and certainly that is what this entire focus is about, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't know whether I was in question period there or late debate. I think the two members could bring that up in late debate. I believe they need the time to do it. So, anyway, Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community, Culture and Heritage. Mr. Speaker, we've received... Sorry. Mr. Speaker, we've received correspondence from professional living artists of Nova Scotia stating the great difficulty they've had in dealing with the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia. This group went to great efforts to follow proper procedure, submit documents, and send correspondence. Yet the gallery took an unacceptable amount of time to make contact with this organization. My question is, are you aware of that the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia has dragged its heels on this issue?
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to the ministers has ended. I will now recognize the Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, on a quick introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will be quick. In the West Gallery, at least I hope, because I can't see there, but the members of Victoria County Council are here. Warden Bruce Morrison, Deputy Warden Fraser Patterson, Merrill McGinnis, David Donovan, Larry Daphne, and John Buchanan. And I wonder if members could please give them a warm welcome to the House.
I would also, Minister, I would also let you know, in the East Gallery, we have the member from the Cape Breton Regional Municipality, May Rowe, with us also today. Thank you.